I'm chairing this session and doing something by way of a short introduction. But like all the roundtables, we at least hope for substantial interaction. So I've already said to each of the participants that I expect them to be brief and to be stimulating and to pose questions. We have three contributions after my introduction from Jean-Marie Fallouc from Brittany, from Anna Hansen from Jämtland in Sweden, and Julia Priest from Lesotho. And the context for the presentations is a project which some of you may have heard of before, because you will have had the pleasure or otherwise of hearing me speak 2 years ago at the University of Staffordshire, when I did a keynote for the FACE conference and talked about universities and their engagement with cities and regions, when, amongst other things, I will have introduced this project, an acronym within an acronym, the PURE project, which is the Pascal University's regional engagement project. I've got a whole presentation here, but I think I'd rather spend the time letting the participants say something and just very briefly introduce it to you. But I do have a PowerPoint presentation. I have many documents. I've put up the website here, which you can see, and if you can't read the URL, then just let me know and I'll point you to it. But it's pure.pascalobservatory.org, which contains within it a whole range of documentation. Let me just say something briefly about it, rather than show a PowerPoint, I think. The genesis of this work is work of the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, based in Paris, who about 5 years ago started a large project looking at the economic contribution of universities to their regions. We, Pascal, one of the organizations that I co-direct, the Observatory of Place Management, Social Capital, and Lifelong Learning, emerged from the work of the OECD in the early part of the last decade around learning cities. And we have an ongoing relationship with the OECD, which led us to being asked to continue some of that work that the OECD had started on mapping the regional engagement of universities. So that's how PURE came about. It came about as a continuation of work that had been started by the OECD, although the OECD carried on doing their own work as well. And we worked with some of the regions that the OECD had previously worked with, notably, and you can see behind me a photograph of one of our reviewers, Steve Garlick. It's gone now. I have eyes in the back of my head, obviously, as well as the screen. Which was it with the region of Värmland in Sweden, which had been involved in that original study. Just in essence, what we have done through a systematic process is, over 2 years, with what started as 14 and now is 19 and coming up, and we're doing another set of studies shortly, systematic studies over 2 years of regions and of the universities and higher education institutions in regions, and how they contribute to the development of the region, not just economically, but culturally, environmentally, and socially. And there is a process of internal self-review by those regions, visits by expert teams, and those expert teams consist of people who come from other regions in the world, both from the region side and from universities elsewhere in the world. Just to give you an example, Jean-Marie from Brittany was with me, with someone from North Netherlands, and another person from London, who had been the chief executive of a London borough. We were the review team that went to Devon and Cornwall, where we looked at the whole of the higher education sector in Devon and Cornwall, which is in the southwest of England, and its relative contribution to the development of those two counties Devon and Cornwall, just an example. The original regions are predominantly regions in Europe, but they also contained regions from Africa. It's wrong to call Lesotho a region, and we had questions about what regions were yesterday, but let's just say regions can be anything from in our cities through to whole countries. Anyway, Lesotho was one of them. Habaroni city in Botswana, and we have people from Botswana here, was another one. There were large cities like Melbourne, with eight universities. There were small territories like Darling Downs in Queensland, to the east of Brisbane, with only one university, with a large rural hinterland. There was Northern Illinois, where the focus was mainly on the short cycle higher education institutions, the so-called community colleges in the US, and their relative contribution in relation to other types of institutions. And then we had a range of European regions, South Transdubia in Hungary, Puglia in Italy, Värmland, Jämtland, Buskerud in Norway, Thames Gateway in London, etc., etc. And what we did was systematically look at contributions, write reports, but most importantly, I think we then, when we met a year into the project in Vancouver, we looked at what the common issues were across different regions, and then clustered regions into according to interest areas, and then attempted to create interaction between the regions around common themes using electronic media. I wish I could say that had been entirely successful. I wouldn't pretend it has been, but we certainly, that was the intention, and we're now doing continuing work, and I think we're probably too early in trying to do that, trying to bring the regions together. But because a number of regions have said 2 years wasn't enough time, we want to continue with you, and that's the case with Jämtland, it's the case with Värmland, it's the case with Flanders in Belgium, etc. I think we're now at the point where we're getting exchanges more effectively. And new regions are coming into the program continually. The next one to come in will be what we're now calling Atlantic Ireland, based around Limerick and Galway. We have great hopes that Brittany will come with us, and that's why Jean-Marie is here. One of the areas of interest was issues of remoteness and rurality. Difficult one to say quickly, isn't it? And so we themed things today around common issues, or let's say issues which create some commonality, around remoteness or relative remoteness and rurality. Jean-Marie will speak first from the Brittany perspective, from let's say a prospective region. Then Anna is going to say something from a region that's been through the whole process and is continuing with us for some while. And we're very fortunate that we have a politician from Jämtland region here. We have the rector of the one university in Jämtland here, together with the vice rector and senior administrator. We have people from the culture side, and that's where Anna and Henrik comes from. So we've got a magnificent Jämtland contingent here. So there should be lots of interaction with them. And I should also say we have in the room people who've been on our review teams as well. We have Roberta from Sicily, who was on the review team for Puglia. And I'm quickly looking around the room. I'm trying to see where, of course, I mentioned Jean-Marie, who was on the review team for Devon and Cornwall. Looking hard around the rest of the room. Don't think anyone else here was on a review team. After Anna, we moved to Julia from Lesotho. I was leading that review in Lesotho, so I have some knowledge, but she has obviously a lot more. So that's the way things are going to go. Jean-Marie is constrained a little bit by Flybe and Air France, in as much as he's got to get a plane at 2 o'clock. So I've asked him to speak first, and we will have some discussion after his presentation. He'll stay as long as he can, and then we'll move on to the other participants. So let me, without further ado, introduce Jean-Marie Falouc, who I should say is also the president of the French I don't know exactly what you call it, but the French network of continuing education is from the University of Brest. So, over to Jean-Marie.
Oh, thank you very much, Mike, for this kind introduction. I apologize because of my early flight, the only flight today to be home to at night. So, I will speak about my region. I apologize for my poor English accent, but French accent. And I will try to share with you some observation of the relation between universities and region in France, and focusing on my region, which is Britain, so very close to Great Britain, close to the culture of Scotland, and I find some dances yesterday were all the same in Brittany. So I am president of the French Net UC in department network, and I am also vice rector of my university, dedicating to lifelong learning. And I try to speak about the relation between our university and the region, and why it has been impossible to be involved in the pure project since we tried since quite two years. But I hope that in the next future we can have better results with our regions. For people who don't know where it's Brittany, in France, in the far west. In France, and my university in Brest is really in the far west of France, close to Cornwall and Devon. But we have not so many exchange with this part, but we have a ferry between Plymouth and Brittany. And the organization of higher education first, I will present the organization of higher education and the organization of the region, and I try to explain very quickly why we have some problem to have a real discussion on the subject of pure. So we have four universities, two in Rennes, one in the south of Brittany, and one in the west of Brittany. And these four universities are completed with other higher education institutions who are dear or involved in one or the other university, and also higher education school. And the main figures of Brittany is 3 million inhabitants, which is represent 5% of the national population of France, and GPD, which is quite high, as fifth in region in France, and number of students is 100,000, and researcher 15,000 researcher in this region. Characteristic of this region is a relatively isolated region, but isolated because of it's quite far from the center. France is a very Jacobin, you know, understand, Jacobin organization, and everything must be organized from Paris. And we are 600 kilometers from Paris, and we have no TGV to go to Brest. So it's quite a long trip to go. We prefer to use plane. And a strong identity at cultural level, social level, and a high rate of participation of student and population to education, and the best result for schooling. But, which is very surprising for many people, the lower participation to higher education. Many people go to baccalaureate, but lower participation to university. Main activities in our region is agriculture, agribusiness, services, and tourism. And we have a strong, really strong third sectors with social enterprise, cooperative, and things like this. And it's a very historic organization in our region. And the unemployment rate is the lowest in France. So 7.7% in the end of 2010. And the higher education and universities are autonomous in France, even in Brittany. But their mission are initial and continuing education, scientific and technological research, and guidance and work inclusion, diffusion of culture, scientific and technical information, participation to European higher level education research area, and international cooperation. This is the main mission of the higher education in France, and all universities must have activity in all this area. So we can conclude that we are in the field of a pure project if we look at diffusion of culture, scientific, technical, and lifelong learning. We don't use lifelong learning in French. They continue to use initial and continuing education, and they don't put in the law lifelong learning. They separate the two things, and you will understand why in the next future. University of Autonomous, but ministry at the state level define national strategies and allocate recurrent funding. And university propose their offer of diploma and their research strategy and negotiate with the ministry who say yes or no and give money for this or no, and based on the contract of 5 years. And tuition fees are very low, and we have quite no private university in France. Until recent time, the relation with regional authorities is very limited and limited in the area, but they participate to discussion funding only for investment, equipment, and building. And when we agree with this, they contract with state, region, and university on a 7 years base contract. For this, only for this point, equipment and building, not for strategy, not for other point. And also local authorities at the city level, where we have our university, for example, in Brest, are involved mainly in support isolated action, very punctually. And also they participate to equipment and they participate to building, but not to strategy and not to the other things of the universities. Since 2008, we have many reform in France, 2007, 2008, and we have created what I call a superstructure. I'm not sure that in English it's correct, but it's a European University of Britain, which is a pole of higher education and research, which included all the higher education institutions in the region. And we try to have a unique governance of this, but they include research centers and also university hospitals. We have two in our region. And they are in charge mainly and partly because each university wants to conserve its own possibility to define its strategy. They are in charge mainly of research strategy, valorization, international relation, but not nothing about lifelong learning, nothing about socioeconomic development, nothing about engagement of the universities. And what I try to do is to work with regional governance, and I will present very briefly this organization at the regional level in France. We have an elected regional council, and we have several vice presidents and offices for each subject. We have a vice president for higher education and research, which have a growing importance. They have no competencies about this. State has this competency for strategy, but region try to have more and more importance in this area. We have a vice president for lifelong learning, which is the main competence of region since 1994. And lifelong learning completely disconnected from higher education and from the other area of education. It's very, very curious. And it is because lifelong learning in France depends on the labor ministry, not from the education ministry. And they are completely separated. And lifelong learning is founded by enterprise and by tax, special tax that enterprise must pay. And we have also a vice president for economic development. We have a vice president for culture, which is the main also competency of the region. So we have many vice presidents, and we have no global view of things. And we have to As I am a member of the university, I can only have a discussion with the vice president for higher education. And he don't understand, he understand, but he don't want to play a role on lifelong learning because it's not a competency, it's a real problem. What I can say, it's my position, it's my point of view. They have little confidence in the real engagement of academics in the development of the region. And few representative, and it's one explanation, few representative and economic stakeholders have a PhD, have made research, have been at university. Most of them have been engineer, or have been school of economic, high school of economic, but not at the university. We have a completely separated organization for all these representatives. Most of them don't come from university, so they are not so ready to have confidence with us. The challenging question could be region. I think they have learned how to work together on the finance, mainly, and building, construction, and things like this, but only on this traditional subject. And we have to try to develop with them a more global approach and a common culture. Could be optimistic, because I see some points, some new thing that appear very recently. We have created at the local level in Brest a local observatory of interaction between higher education and economy, and they try to evaluate the benefit of higher education. It's the first time we do that. It's very curious, but it's the first time. They want to know if there is what is the benefit to, so that we can develop, find new ideas and develop new things. At regional level, we have a consultative organization which is called now Economic, Social, and Environmental Council. And they are very, very open to this kind of question we are dealing with in our pure project. And as I say yesterday, the Brittany is the first French region who take part of the European Association, which is called IRLAL, and I hope that this fact will enable us to have more contact with them. And I think one thing we are seeing now is a better understanding between university and socio-economic stakeholders. It's very new, and we could discuss since 2 or 3 years with industrial organization, with association of entrepreneurs, with trade unions, about the role of universities in lifelong learning, sure, but also for economic development. It's very, very new that we could have a discussion, and maybe discussion is not enough, a better understanding, and we could develop some new project with them. So thank you very much for your attention, and I apologize because I will leave you, but not yet. We can have some discussion about this, about what I think.
Few observations and questions around what Jean-Marie has presented so far. Does anyone like to kick off with any observations or any issues that seem to have resonance with themselves?
Yeah, I was having worked down in the West Country of England, in Plymouth, and contacting Cornwall and such like, aware that when they opened up the ferry between Plymouth and Brittany, There was a kind of behind that, was a kind of a conception of very old trade routes between those two regions. And I was surprised when you said that you hadn't developed particularly strong links with Cornwall and Devon universities and other agencies in that sector, particularly because it's actually, I think, probably the poorest region in the UK. It was Objective One status, I think it still is. The fact that you've got relatively low unemployment, and there have always been big problems of underemployment and unemployment and people having to leave Cornwall and Devon, why links haven't developed between the two regions?
I say that we have very low level of interaction between the two. Nowadays we have some interreg project at the research level, and my university drive an interreg project with very close to which involve Plymouth universities on maritime area of research and new energy, maritime energy. But and we have not so many connections between, there is a channel between the two. There is a language, and for French people, even for Britain people, but also for French people, it's always, we have always difficulties with to talk with English people, and I'm not Briton, I come from Normandy, so I can speak about my colleagues from Brittany. They are very open, but many of them don't find it easy to develop a project and thing with English people. For example, our students, very few students go to Cornwall and Devon with Erasmus exchanges. They go everywhere in Europe, but not in England. Why? It's very cool because it's very close. And we have, nowadays, we have a connection with ferry. Ferry, which is a Brittany ferry. And there's the idea of Gouvenec, which is a promoter of this. It's an industrial and agribusiness man. And the thing that we have so many possibilities to, we have a such, develop agriculture in Brittany, it could be possible to have increased exchange with the south of England. And they have imagined to have a link, a permanent link with the south of Cornwall since 40 years, maybe more or less, 50 years. But only for tourism. If you have a look for this, it's only mainly for tourism and mainly for Britain people to come in holidays and buy beer in France. And I don't find a real flow of exchange between the two countries at industrial level. People, individual, people coming in France to buy houses or things like this. Tourism, but not really economic exchange. And neither at student and academic exchange. Now things are changing because we have also plane flight connection with because of Flybe. We have organized connection. We have three connection with England since 2 or 3 years, and flight are full. So we can think that. Things are changing, and people full, and they are both sides, both ends. So what I want to do, participating in the committee CDG visit group in Devon and Cornwall, is to try to increase the number of projects we have together. With Brittany, I think it's the same. We have the same culture, more or less. Sometimes some words are completely. So I think it could be possible to have more connection. And but my region is not oriented to see what we can do with Great Britain. I think, in my opinion. They are more focusing on Quebec, on China, on Germany. And they don't think that they could develop something strong with the south of England. I don't know why.
In our visit to Devon and Cornwall, Plymouth University talks about itself as being the entrepreneurial university and social enterprise as being very central to the work they do. Paralleled exactly the sorts of things that were going on in Brittany, but neither side knew about it. Even the comparative work some of the comparative work in marine sciences wasn't really known about across the two. And in some cases, when you come in as an external broker, which is what we were doing, you can actually bring people together in ways in which don't happen in other ways. But let's continue. Anyone else want to make a comment? This will be your last chance because he'll be leaving fairly soon. Can I just ask one thing, just for you to comment on, that's particular issues in your region in relation to your relative isolation. Are there any special things that you want to say in relation to that? As for instance, the creation of that pole of bringing the universities together to create a European University of Brittany, being a response to relative isolation. You could say that things like that are happening here in Scotland, for example. We have something called research pooling, where all the economics departments, for example, of the Scottish universities work together. In order to be competitive internationally, the view is you won't do it, even as the University of Edinburgh or the University of St Andrews or the University of Glasgow. You have to bring all that expertise together to get a nucleus of people that are going to be sufficiently competitive. And I believe that is happening in other discipline areas. Was that the thinking of the European University of Brittany?
This is the way we have organized this European University as a network of university. In the other part of France, this kind of organization of regroupment is at city level, but in Britain it's not possible because it's we can only have a regional level, which is a quite large region. And for the Excellence Initiative, which started last year in France with many billion of euro on the table, the jury finds that our regional level is not enough. And we are working to create some kind of inter-regional network with Pays de Loire, with Nantes, with Le Mans, with Angers, to create some kind of West network of university, of higher education institution, to be more visible, more efficient. I'm not sure that it's a good, the best way, because they focus only on the research activity. I think we have more to focus also on the other mission of higher education. And we try to exist at the west of Paris. It's not so easy.
Thank you, Jean-Marie. We're hoping that our next Pascal conference is going to be in Brittany next year, so that might provide an opportunity for people to visit Brittany. So you're about to leave us, and so we'll hand over to Anna, who is from Jampli in Östersund, which was the host of one of our conferences last year. At the wonderful museum, which I also recommend you to visit. I should say that the director is here, obviously. I can't say anything other than that. So I'll hand over to Anna.
Thank you. I work in a museum, a regional museum in Jämtland, but we do quite a lot of regional engagement work and work together with the university and with the regional authorities and other stakeholders as well. So that's why we are involved quite a lot with learning. You see a picture of Sweden, and it's the dark blue area in the middle, that is Jämtland. And as you can see in the large picture, it's quite green, lots of forests, rivers, lakes, and in the western part there are mountains. And I'll show you a few pictures just to make you see what it's like in our region. This is a picture of the population. The red dots are population, and you can see they're very much centered around the lake and where Östersund, the regional capital, is located. And very few people live in the rest of the region, so it's quite sparsely populated. The area is 49,000 square kilometers, and that is larger than Belgium, it's larger than Denmark, It's twice the size of Wales, so it's quite a large area, but there are only 126,600 people. So there's a lot of space for everyone. And if you look at the changes in the population for the past few years, you have a picture here where blue are the areas where the population has decreased, and the red is increase in population. And as you can see, it's quite blue. There's some parts which are yellowish, and that means there's no change. And you can also see that it has decreased quite a lot for the last 10 years. And if you look at another picture, you can see how many are over the age of 65. And in the blue areas, there is less than 25% who are over the age of 65. And the red you get, the more people you have who are over the age of 65. So we have quite an old population in many places. And then if you look at gender, the blue areas means you have a surplus of men. Red means you have more women than men. So if you want to get a husband, you can go there. We're quite a lot of men in all of the region, really. So we have a few challenges in our region. We have a decreasing population. We have an aging population. We have more men than women, and we also have fewer people with higher education in the region than average in Sweden. We have about 31% of the population in the region has a post-secondary school education. And the average in the country is about 37%. So we are a bit lower than the rest of Sweden. So our plan, I mean, it is quite a depressing picture if you look at it like this. Our plan is to turn the disadvantages into assets. You have to see the positive sides of this. And some people do that, but it's also about changing people's attitudes to make them see these advantages instead of obstacles. So we have large areas with no people in them. That means there are great undisturbed experiences of nature for tourists. Many people like sitting there looking out, and you can see no buildings, just forests and mountains and lakes. And it's also great for growing forests. You can have an industry with forests. Jämtland region is one of Sweden's largest suppliers of timber. But that's also an area we could develop much more. We could make more use of it instead of just chopping the trees down and exporting them. We could do something out of them. That's an area we could develop much more. We have quite long winters with lots of snow. That means it's great for skiing. And winter sports and tourism are areas which are very much looked into both by the region and the university. And there also are quite a lot of cooperation going on in the region. The university cooperates with different ski companies, and they also have a winter sports center where the cross-country skiing team is doing their testing of their physical performance. They have sport technology development. So it's quite a lot of things going on. And the region, on the other hand, also think a lot about tourism, supporting museums, cultural institutions, supporting many local history societies, and that kind of things. So you have wide range of tourism, not only the long winters, we also have summers. And if you have a decreasing population, it means people are moving away. That means that you can find cheap houses and farms, And that means possibilities for small-scale food production. And that is something that is really growing in our region at the moment. This year we were appointed the National Food Capital in Sweden. And we were also appointed by UNESCO as Creative City of Gastronomy. So there is quite a lot going on around food. And that is something that the region works quite a lot with, trying to support food producers in many ways. And we aren't that many people. That means it's easy to get to know each other and cooperate. And if you want to do something, you can always find someone who knows someone, who is related to someone, who is the right person. So connections are quite easy to make. This is a picture from a collaboration our museum has with the Mid-Sweden University. These are students. This is their exam. They're trying to show that they know quite a lot about the Sami people, the indigenous people. They're training to become teachers for small children with a special competence in cultural heritage. So that's a kind of collaboration which we have put together. The problem with these kind of collaborations is that it's usually one person knowing someone else. So it's based on people knowing each other. And even if that is an asset, it is also a problem because you want to build structures which will last, even though you change one person or that person moves away. So we have, these are a few of our regional priorities. Tourism is very important. And since there are long distances, distance learning or e-learning, very important both for the university and for the region, which is in charge of adult education. So they are both working on that. Not very much together, but separately. And attracting young people to the region and to the university, and hopefully make them stay so that there will be some people left. Culture and creativity is important to the region. That includes the food production and the forestry, since we have quite a lot of trees. We've been involved in the Pure project for 2 years, and we are now on our third year. And we have had two reports. We had a visiting group, and they wrote reports for us. And it was evident that the region and the university share many priorities, but we're not always working together on these priorities. Sometimes we are, but not always. And we can do much more about that. And it took quite a long time to see the advantages of cooperation and combining resources. We're still working on that. But I think more and more people are realizing that being so few, being in an area which is so large, we need to work together to make something happen. So after 2 years in the Pure project, we have a regional coordinating group which discuss common priorities and trying to figure out where to start working. And our main priority now is to find structures for this cooperation. How are we supposed to do it? And if anyone has good ideas about how you do it in a very concrete, practical level, we're very happy to listen to you. So just short about the university and the region. The university is the young university, established in 2005, 1,500 students, 15,000, sorry. But about half of them study through distance learning or e-learning. So that's something they are very good at and work quite a lot with. There are three campuses, and they are located one in our region and two in a neighboring region. So we have actually two regions they need to cooperate with. They are creating a new educational strategy, and we have agreed that the region will be involved in some way when they do that, to make sure that we know what the other part is doing. And the region is even younger. It was established this year. Before, there were separate bodies, and that made cooperation with the region very difficult for other people, because you didn't know if you were going to talk to the administrative board or the county council or the municipalities. And they are creating operational programs for various areas. The university will be involved in this work with the program for lifelong learning and the program for culture, tourism and gastronomy, which will be the first ones. So we have agreed that we will cooperate. But we have a few challenges. Even if we have agreed that cooperation is good and we want to cooperate, how do we go from talk to action? How do we actually make it happen? And I think after listening to many of these presentations here, that many others have the same problem. And how do you create structures which will last, which is not dependent on people knowing each other cooperating? Because cooperation now, there are a lot of cooperation going on, but it's one person in one university department who knows a person in a company and they cooperate often. So you have to make it on another level to make sure that it is the university who cooperates with the region as an entity. And then how can university and region together involve other people and stakeholders? Because they're not just the university and the region who need to cooperate. We also need to involve businesses, entrepreneurs, museums, and others. And is it really possible to do something about the population? If you think about the pictures I showed you first, is it possible to make people want to settle in this rural area far away? There are few opportunities to find a job. You need to create a job for yourself. And if people move away from a small village, then the school will close down and then no one wants to move there because there is no school, there is no shop. And then buses, infrastructure is a huge problem in these kind of areas. So if anyone has any bright ideas on any of these questions, I would be very happy. Thank you.
Well, there's a challenge. Some bright ideas. Anyone else like to make a comment, particularly about dealing with these challenges? It's a very quick comment. I wonder to what extent these kind of issues can be addressed regionally, given issues like globalization. To what extent are these issues outside of the region?
Well, that's really difficult to answer. Of course, I think it's really important that we cooperate with other regions and learn from them. And it's also important that we cooperate with neighboring regions, so we have a larger area. And we, in our region, we cooperate quite a lot with a neighboring region in Norway, Trondheim region. We have a lot of cooperation going on there, and that's a larger region. So I think cooperation is really necessary. But on the other hand, we also have to handle many of these problems regionally, because many of the politicians, they sit in Stockholm and have a completely different perspective because it's a big city. And I think few politicians on the national level actually know what it's like in different parts of the country. Sorry, Lena.
Would the politician like to say anything?
I agree. Thank you, Donna.
We also have a regional process going on in Sweden right now. It will be, we're looking at larger regions all over the country, and we are mostly looking east towards Västernorrland, and we've had, as we heard, the university has a lot of course, collaboration with that region already because of the university sites in Västernorrland. And we also have the civil society that has had a lot of collaboration with the eastern region, Västernorrland, for a long, long time. And we are really looking looking forward to it, some of us at least, collaborate and be a bigger region. We need more people actually to have a base, and we can do that together. But of course, Norway is important to us, the Trondheim region.
Can I just make an observation, Mike? But yeah, it's a global phenomenon, isn't it? The growth of cities and mega cities, and the increasing, the corollary of that is the depopulation in many rural areas. I mean, that's a global phenomenon, isn't it? So the problems you're facing to some extent are absolutely core and kind of crucial to this civilization in some ways. Yeah, number one. Number two, I may have misunderstood, but the role of the common agricultural policy, although much maligned in this country, and I'll leave that there, did actually mean that there was support for farmers in particular to often stay in those areas. Yeah, and does that have an impact in Sweden, that policy, or any other EU policies?
I'm not very good at the agricultural policies. In the 1970s, quite a lot of farms closed down. They were merged into larger entities. And I think that was necessary for them to survive with new equipment and everything they needed. And that has continued until today, mainly. But they are still closing down many farms. But there are many... Well, you can see that many people are taking up own forms of making cheese and trying to make it small scale. It's a new type of agriculture that is coming in our region.
But it's small scale and doesn't employ many people,
you
think?
No, it doesn't at all. But it also is often trying to be part of the tourism industry. So many of them are trying to... add on to their farm with a cafe or trying to offer dinners and food experiences and that kind of thing. So it will be combination industry, really.
You kind of get that phenomenon in a sense, don't you, whereby you've got things which are in decline, which we then kind of almost turn into sort of heritage and then sell as a kind of tourism product, which is quite an interesting development, I guess.
My name is Annika Malm. I'm from the University of Borås in Sweden as well. I was wondering, because I'm working with a project with foreign academics, how is it in Jämtland? Do you have many immigrants and so? Because my experience is that they don't want to go to the countryside. They want to be in the bigger cities because they feel more at home, it's more people. But we have been talking to many of them that they might, if you advertise and make them, you know, see the advantages of your beautiful region, really, you might get to get immigrants. So how is it in Jämtland? Do you have any, or do they come to your region?
Well, we have a lot of tourists coming, of course, and we have very few people moving there. I know they've been down to Holland trying to attract people from the Netherlands, and there were a few people which created big articles in the local newspapers. They are not attracting many people. I mean, one or two families which might move there. So very few people want to live there, but they want to...
come there for a week. That is a difficulty, and we do have refugees, but the problem is most of them wants to go to the bigger cities, but then we have this kind of thinking that if we give a good start, where we are, when they come to us, we'll be happy to deliver it to the south of Sweden. But then again, there are groups of immigrants that really feel like they're at home in our region. I teach Swedish for immigrants myself, and we have a large group of Burmese immigrants. I don't know if that's correct English. And they are really feeling at home. They really like it. So I think that is a much better way to get people to move in than spending a lot of money trying to get the Dutch people coming up. Yes.
I wonder, just to end things, whether anyone from the university, Mid-Sweden University, would like to say anything about the challenges from the university perspective in being in the region. The rector is going to say something.
Thank you. It's a very gloom picture that is painted of our region, but there is also another side to that. I would say that, for example, we have the Åre region, which is counted as the number three or the best, one of the best three winter destinations in the world, having 30,000 beds for guests. So even though the population may decrease by 1,000 people, the tourism, incoming tourism, has increased by several thousands more than that, creating a gross national product of the region actually being growing. And the slow food movement is even though it's sparse, it's the densest social entrepreneurship region in Sweden. The university campus is the only one in a mountainous area having a large percentage of national and international recruitment compared to other campuses. So there is a positive side where there are a lot of actually strongholds, I would say, of the region, and one of them being the axis created between the university and the tourism industry and the athletes and winter sports industry as well. We have all the Swedish Olympic athletes in winter sports coming to this region for training, exercising, and testing, and a large percentage of them living there as well. So I think, you know, you could paint sort of the disaster that we are facing here, but there are also some areas where we are actually outstanding in Sweden and internationally, and that should be the starting point for many of for creating creative activities in terms of development as well. So I think there is a much better outlook than what was perhaps presented here in terms of what could happen in the future.
Thank you. I think we should send the UK Winter Olympic team over to you. I think, as I said, oh no, remember the Scottish contingent of curling, the curling gold medal, but not much more, I'm afraid. I think we need to move on, so thank you, Anna, for those comments, and I think now we should move on to Julia. Those of you who don't know Julia, once she was Professor of Adults and lifelong learning here at the University of Glasgow, makes many return trips. She's now holding a chair in Lesotho and maybe moving somewhere else soon. Together. But she can't tell you exactly where just yet. Over to Julia.
I think what has struck me so far is that how different conceptions of rurality and remoteness are. And I'm going to introduce another set of ideas about what constitutes rurality and remoteness. I don't have a map, which is probably a big mistake, but I'm going to talk about four different countries in Africa. And this is because we set up a project called ITMUR, which translates into Implementing the Third Mission of Universities in Africa, which was inspired by the PURE project. And out of those four countries, two countries were already members of one of the PURE cohorts. And what we tried to do was take an African position on the notion of community engagement and community service. And in our, with the exception of the University of Botswana, which had set up a regional relationship with its city, the other three universities were really starting from a much lower base, and what we looked at was the idea of community service, the traditional notion of universities supporting their communities, and rather than try and create the more abstract idea of a set of organizations and institutions working together, we started with a practical project in each, two practical projects in each university to try and demonstrate what could be possible. And from that, we then networked out into different organisations. So we were working on a much more localised way compared with the other aspects of Pure. But I start with Africa being a remote continent. It has issues of remoteness in terms of the fact that it doesn't have the same infrastructure as many of the countries we've been talking about so far. It's remote in terms of communications infrastructure, digital divide, roads, transport, electricity, telephones, postal services. If you want to post anything across Africa, you have to do it by courier. There just isn't a postal service. And even within most of these countries, if you want to get anything delivered, you deliver it by hand, or you don't expect it to arrive. And if people try and send me something in Lesotho, my Christmas cards usually arrive around April. So it's remote in a number of ways. But also within those countries, there are issues of remoteness in terms of rural and urban populations. And with the exception of one of the countries, I'm not so sure about Botswana, actually. Botswana may be 50-50, but certainly in two of the countries, the majority of the population is still rural. The city populations are relatively small. So I'll just graphically imagine, I don't know how much you know Africa, but there is Africa as a sort of triangle. To the west, to your west, is Nigeria, and we have one university in Nigeria, University of Calabar, in the Cross River State. And then the other countries are in Southern Africa. Lesotho is actually in South Africa itself, at the bottom of South Africa to the east, and it's surrounded by South Africa. So it suffers a double remoteness. And also, unlike most perceptions of Africa, it's very high up. It starts at 1,000 meters above sea level and goes to 3,000 meters above sea level and is extremely cold in the winter. And we have relatively long winters. Malawi is the other country, which is eastern Africa, somewhere between near the middle-ish, roughly, just below the middle, with a population of 12 million. And then Botswana is sort of just north of South Africa. But all of these countries also have very different terrains. Nigeria is relatively, Cross River State is relatively well, fairly fertile. Lesotho is an extremely mountainous country with a lot of soil erosion and very sporadic fertility. Botswana has a large portion of the country as desert, and it's very hot and dry. And Malawi is very hot as well and humid, with seasonal productivity rather than productivity all the year round in terms of rainfall. All of the countries have seasonal rainfall, which affects how they operate in terms of productivity and their economies. So ITMOA was implementing the Third Mission of Universities, a Pan-African research project, exploring how the Third Mission can enhance the contribution to the Millennium Development Goals. It was time-limited and developed a case study approach, and it's those case studies that I'm going to talk about in terms of their rurality. Lesotho, we do have some pictures. Lesotho had a region called Hatcher's Neck, which is a very remote mountain town, 5.5 hours drive from the university, 6 hours drive from the main city of Maseru. The population in Lesotho is 2 million. The population in the Hatcher's Neck region is around 8,000, but that served a number of villages, of which maybe there were 1,000 in each village, something like that. This country, as does Botswana, suffers with very high HIV/AIDS prevalence population, which impacts on the nature of how families and communities operate now. Many parents are the ones that are dying or very sick. So there are a number of orphans and vulnerable children who are either brought up by their grandparents or may even be bringing themselves up. In terms of temperatures, Hatcher's Neck is one of the coldest areas, not the coldest, but one of the coldest areas, and we get temperatures of down to -5, sometimes lower, and not very high temperatures, as you can see. It's a bit more like Scotland in terms of temperature experience, although we didn't get -15, I have to say, thank goodness. But the infrastructure is relatively poor, of course. You can just about get to Hatcher's Neck by road, but those roads are not good roads. And there is a twice daily bus service to the capital city, so it's actually relatively well serviced compared with some of the other regions. And that's it's a nice picturesque area. That's just one photograph of one of the villages that we were working in. And the project that we worked with was called Mohoma Teneng, translated as educating to feed ourselves. This is a fairly typical community development project, a self-help organization, mostly run by women. And the idea was to try and create income to establish food security. Across most of these countries, food security is a big issue. Very few of these countries are able to actually support themselves entirely by growing their own food. Lesotho certainly has been on the world feed program for some time, where we get donations of maize during some of the more stringent periods, and the other countries have similar experiences of food shortages. But the idea was to try and encourage the use of indigenous farming methods. Farming in these countries, certainly in Lesotho, is almost entirely oxen-drawn ploughs, so it's very manual, intensive labour, usually community farming, subsistence farming level only. There are almost no commercial farms at all in Lesotho, and very, very few places use tractors. This particular area has no electricity. Water is piped water, if you're lucky, from standpipes. Some of them still use wells. So infrastructure is very low. So remoteness in many ways, apart from just geographical remoteness. But nevertheless, there are neighboring schools. There is a hospital clinic, youth organization, and there are links, international links, partly because of the person who set up this particular project. Our support was to run 3 workshops to help with building ventilated pit latrines, to give basic income generation skills, and to provide advice and guidance on care and support issues. Botswana, another very different country. Khansi is in the Kalahari Desert area. It's about 800 kilometers from the city of Habaroni. Very dry, very desert conditions, very sporadic rainfall, temperatures very hot compared with Lesotho. And the project was to work with a marginalized nomadic group called the San Tribe. They have recently been settled. There have been a number of government efforts to settle these tribes. It's a bit like the traveling community in Britain, in the UK, the Roma communities in Europe. But the government has been trying to provide settlement so that they can get regular schooling and things like that. And so the project was to work with these particular very remote communities. As you can see, very different terrain, very flat. And on the whole, not very good growing ground in most of Botswana. But nevertheless, most people are farmers. Almost everybody is a farmer, because that's how you survive. The support from the project was really to support an existing initiative by one of the neighboring associated universities to the University of Botswana, funded by Kellogg. And it was a self-help training project to try and give these communities a range of skills. Again, issues on HIV and AIDS, income generation, always those things, but also to give them communication strategies, because they are very isolated. They have a separate language from the main national languages. So to give them skills to engage with the authorities that are shoving them around, basically. Now, Calabar is in Nigeria, which has a very, very highly populated country. Both Botswana and Lesotho have around 2 million people in the whole country. Nigeria is the most populated country in Africa, and the Cross River State alone has a population of 8 million. But there nevertheless still is a rural Calabar where it's mostly illiterate women and girl farmers are surviving on subsistence farming. And ITMA's support, the university's support there, was to develop workshops on how to create good organic fertilizers, again using indigenous methods, encouraging people to use the locally based resources rather than trying to import resources. But as you can see, it's a much more luscious area. Food is much easier to grow in this area. This was probably also taken a little bit after the rainy season, so it looks a bit better than the other two countries. But nevertheless, it's in terms of being able to provide for themselves, Cross River State farmers are able to do that, even though they're not commercial farmers. Malawi, the University of Malawi is a federal university with a number of colleges in different parts of the country. And Zomba is itself a remote area. It's a good 2 hours drive from the main cities, which is Blantyre in the south, and a whole day's drive away from the center of Malawi, which is Lilongwe. So although the community project that was working with the university was only 4 kilometers away, the university college itself is in a remote rural setting. And there were 17 villages, of which 41% were living in extreme poverty. Malawi is by far the poorest country that was part of this four-country partnership. And issues of hunger and poverty were even higher than in the other countries. Our support, the ITMA support, the university support, was again a range of workshops, some drama activities, to enable people to be able to articulate their own concerns as well as generate income. So trying to really, it's a combination of empowerment in terms of citizenship and democracy and empowerment in terms of being able to feed themselves. And as you can see, this is a very poor area. The structure of the houses themselves are much poorer than in the other countries, and the ground is really very unfertile. And access to water is a big issue. So what were the issues for community engagement? The main one, of course, was transport and communications, very erratic public transport, lack of basic infrastructures, and a number of funding issues for traveling to these communities. If I take Lesotho as an example, Lesotho is, the university itself is crumbling around its ears at the moment in terms of funds. It can barely support itself, let alone start supporting remote rural areas. So funding was a big issue in terms of getting access, getting petrol, getting transport. The other big issue, of course, is poverty. Because of the lack of basic amenities, sanitation and water, there were issues of, as soon as the university would approach those areas, they were seen as some kind of golden resource. And it was very difficult to create a divide between nurturing independence and those communities seeing us as something on which they could become very dependent. So the issues for community engagement are also about how we can create long-term commitment to turn those communities around from a state of dependency and need to one of self-sufficiency and growth. Other issues, language and literacy levels. In most African countries, the national language or the language of development is quite often in a colonial language, either French or English or Afrikaans or German in some cases. So trying to enable people to have a say in their own country's development when their own language is not the language that is being spoken nationally is also an issue. Most of these countries, Nigeria, for instance, the common language is just English or Pidgin English. In Botswana and Malawi and Lesotho, there was a local national African language as well as the language of English. But another issue is the continuity of support. Because of the distance and the time taken for travelling, staff motivation was low, frequency of visits was low, and that impacts on monitoring and quality and control of different activities. Our attempts to address those issues, we involved people with indigenous language skills, we encouraged volunteering, and the other thing that one quite often forgets with many of these communities, because they're starting from such a low base, any input actually has a significant impact on people's self-esteem and their ability to do something. So even though we had very little input into many of these communities, you could see some immediate tangible results. But all of these needed follow-up if we were going to move them into the next stage of any kind of empowerment. So I was asked to produce some questions. The questions for us are how to raise funds for transport, how to motivate staff and other volunteers, and even to what extent should this be a volunteering exercise? In a country that is already poor, with people who are already poor, why should we be asking them to volunteer for nothing on top of that? And also a question for us, because of the way the universities, the stage at which the universities are looking at community engagement, how could we engage the wider community and help them see this as a worthwhile exercise, particularly when the university itself is struggling to survive.
Well, thanks, Julia. I think we've seen a very different perspective there in terms of what the challenges are in relation to engagement by universities. We've got 5-6 minutes left, so can I ask if anyone would like to comment, ask questions?
Julia, thank you very much. I knew very little about the work that you were doing, but I feel I know a lot more now. Just in terms of volunteering in the wider university to engage, I just wonder if you could say a little more, or have you thought about work-related learning or work-integrated learning, or maybe service learning as one way of getting the wider university and perhaps the learners more involved in projects?
Yes. I think the main, I'll talk mostly about Lesotho because Lesotho is the country where I'm working. It applies in different ways to the other universities. There are ad hoc arrangements within different departments whereby people do internships. There are some work placements for some of the projects. The agriculture, Faculty of Agriculture, by virtue of the nature of its role, does a number of placement projects with the students. So volunteering in that way with students is fairly well established in different areas. But one of the things that isn't done very well is the concept of service learning. And indeed, that is our proposed next phase of this project, how to look at service learning and how to generate a service learning ethos within the universities. In South Africa, that's a feature of all the activities because it's part of the white paper for higher education in South Africa as a means of counteracting the apartheid regime and encouraging citizenship responsibility. But outside of South Africa, it's very sporadic and not well coordinated. So that's one area where we're proposing to develop. In relation to employers, the very beginning of our attempt to respond to the PURE agenda, we held a public meeting and tried to encourage a discussion about employer relations with the university and things. And it's at a very, very low starting point. It's recognized that there is a need, but one of the things that one has to recognize in many of these African countries is that things move very, very slowly, much more slowly than they would in European countries, for all the reasons that I've outlined, really. So there is interest, but that interest has yet to be really tapped and
built into something.
Thank you.
One of the challenges in implementing lifelong learning and engagement have been the lack of policies at national level as well as at institutional level. So I would like to know, regarding the four countries, what is the reflection of lifelong learning and engagement at the national level policy as well as at the institutional level?
Yes, that's very interesting. I've written a whole book on this. You can called Lifelong Learning and Development from a Southern Perspective. The University of Botswana and Botswana itself, the University of Botswana and Botswana government have a much closer relationship than some of the other universities have. And in Botswana, it is an embedded part of the National Development Plan. Lifelong learning is seen as part of that. Lifelong learning in many African countries barely goes beyond basic literacy. Lifelong learning is part of Lesotho's education strategic plan as well, but when you start to read what they mean by lifelong learning, they just mean post-literacy skills. So lifelong learning is not a well-articulated concept in many of these countries. I don't know in Malawi what the situation is, and I don't know in Nigeria. But in Lesotho, it is also built into the mission statement, lifelong learning and community service. But when you look at the policy level of lifelong learning, it really doesn't embrace this kind of work at all.
Any final comments? Thank you, Julia. And thank you, Anna. I think we've had some really interesting perspectives, and I think we've had some excellent contributions from the audience. I suppose I should give a final plug. Have a look at that website. I think you've heard some very interesting material there. And I think one of the great benefits of the work that we have been trying to do is that we are using our abilities as such as they are to try and engage in all continents in the world and trying to bring together different perspectives, whether they be Europe, North America, Africa, Australia. We haven't made it into Asia just yet, but watch this space. No doubt we will in due course. And I'd also say, even from, you know, one of the things that struck me in what Julia was saying is, to what extent, you know, can we cooperate more internationally? And that's something that we try and do here from Julia's time here. We have a number of collaborative agreements. That's one of the reasons that you see some of the people here in the room, like Mpoki from Dar es Salaam, and we have these arrangements with a variety of other African universities, which we, you know, I can't pretend that everything we do at the University of Glasgow is altruistic, far from it. But some of the things I think are attempts to create good relationships with the African continent. I think more of those types of exchanges, and some of the things that Julia mentioned, and some of the things that I found in Botswana, in Lesotho, were things that we could learn from as well, and so it's in a spirit of mutuality that we hope we can do these things. Okay, well, I think we should end there, and let's thank our speakers in the